Hello and welcome to Pharmalex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with Pharmalex's Patrick Neuenhausen about sterility assurance and how manufacturers can demonstrate that the finished product is sterile, not simply by passing a sterility test, which will not provide assurance of sterility, but through a holistic contamination control strategy based on a risk assessment. As Patrick points out, it is the CCS that demonstrates a manufacturer's understanding of all of their design, technical, procedural, and organizational controls. Patrick is director and principal consultant at Pharmalex and has more than 25 years of experience in the industry across a variety of platforms, including biologics, sterile fill finish, and solid oral dose. To start with, Patrick, and welcome, could you perhaps explain what sterility assurance is and what makes it challenging or difficult for manufacturers?
Well, first of all, thanks, Elizabeth, for the invite and the opportunity to speak about this, for me, interesting topic. And to answer your question, it's important first to understand that sterility of a product cannot be completely assured, and there are a number of reasons why sterility testing has its limitations. First, people need to know it is a destructive process, because once you have tested a sample, you can't use it any longer. So, of course, you can't test your whole product, or you won't have anything left to supply to your patients. Instead of that, you are relying on all control measures that you have to put in place to give the confidence that you can exclude contamination from your product.
Great. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about sterility testing, what is required and what it is looking for.
Certainly. The sterility test, it's a harmonized test method that is described in the EU, the US and the Japanese pharmacopoeia. And it specifies how many units you have to test, and that depends on the batch size. For example, if you have a batch size of 10,000 vials, you only need to have 20 samples, which is the first limitation of the test, because statistically speaking, the chances of picking up contamination from that small sample size, these are just very slim. The second limitation of the sterility test is the type of media that you are expected to use. The pharmacopoeia, they described tryptixoy broth, known as TSB, or fluid thioglycolate medium, or FTM, because these give you the greatest chance of isolating aerobic and anaerobic or microaerophilic microorganisms, typically related to human skin or to human origin. However, there are a huge number of microorganisms that don't grow in these media. So that's an item or an aspect you need to take into account. The third limitation is your incubation temperature, which is recommended between 20 to 25 degrees for TSB and between 30 and 35 degrees Celsius for FTM. And these temperatures, they are chosen because these fall within the spectrum of the typical microorganisms that we have seen with humans, like the isolation of these microorganisms with TSB and FTM. However, again, there are loads of microorganisms that are not able to grow at these temperatures, so it's not a guarantee. And these limitations are, in fact, made clear in the European pharmacopoeia as well, as it literally states satisfactory results only indicate that no contaminating microorganisms have been found in the sample examined in the conditions of the test. So that's a very short synopsis of some of the limitations of the sterility test.
Thank you, Patrick. Given the limitations, how do manufacturers address sterility assurance?
It comes down to quality by design. Have you designed your process to limit the possibility of introducing contamination as much as possible? It is clearly outlined in the Annex 1, which underscores the principles of quality risk management as a proactive tool for sterility assurance. And that means that you take into account the design of your equipment, that you have used sterilized materials, the design of your facility, taking into account how materials and people flow. Your people are, of course, the biggest risk factor, because at some time point they might interact with the product, and you want to avoid that at all costs. So if you can design that out, that is a huge benefit. And that is what quality by design is. It's a holistic concept that considers everything. It's what it's made clear in the Annex 1 with regards to your contamination control strategy. It is the sum of all those aspects that gives you a high level of assurance that you are able to maintain and produce a sterile product.
Thanks, Patrick. Obviously, this is a big priority for the regulators. What are they emphasizing manufacturers do as part of their contamination control strategy?
Yeah, what we are seeing is that there is far more emphasis from the regulators on making use of barrier technologies or any other novel technologies, which are now available to manufacturers. And when talking about barrier technologies, these range from relatively simpler solutions such as restricted access barrier systems or RABs to the full use of closed isolated technology. In fact, Annex 1 states that the manufacturers need to justify any alternative approaches to the use of isolators or RABs.
Can you explain a little more about RABs and the different types available?
Sure. At a very high level, there are mainly three main types of RABs. The first type is an open passive RABs, as they call it, which is not equipped with a dedicated air handling system. Here, the unidirectional airflow in the filling and the capping area, if that's applicable, is generated by fans and filters that are embedded in the false ceiling of the production room. It is considered to be open because the air for the unidirectional airflow is exhausted into the production room without any control or filtration. The second type of RABs is what they call an active RABs, which is a similar concept. But the difference is this one is equipped with its own independent air handling system. So the air is extracted from the adjacent clean room and then filtered separately through its own ventilation system. And that passes through HEPA filters into the RABs enclosure. So that's it has its own active air supply into the RABs system. The third RABs option that there is, that is called a closed active RAB system, which is basically a box where the air is introduced like an active RAB system into the enclosure. But instead of the air being blown through the clean room, it is extracted within the RAB's enclosure itself.
You mentioned isolators, Patrick. Can you describe these technologies?
Sure. When you compare it to RABs, an isolator, these are more full enclosure types of barrier systems, and there are two different types. The first one is what they call a closed isolator, which is basically the box where you load all your components in, you decontaminate all the materials that are present, including the surfaces, and you do your manipulations with your product, you fill it, and only when the product is in its final container and completely closed and sealed, then you open the isolator again. So there is no infeed or there is no outfeed from any components throughout your whole aseptic manufacturing process. Then the second option is what they call an open isolator, which is designed to allow a constant feed in or feed out of materials throughout the operations through one or more openings. The doors, of course, they still remain closed. It's just that you have some kind of a pass-through to the adjacent clean room.
Could you clarify the difference between an isolator and a closed RABS?
The big difference between an isolator and a closed RABS is that when you use an isolator, you have to pass an integrity test. And the isolators must be decontaminated using a validated and an automated decontamination cycle. Isolators in general, they provide a higher level of protection to the product, whereas RABs, they are typically disinfected through a manual process using a sporicidal agent and an integrity test of the enclosure itself. That is not possible because you don't seal it completely. So you can't use RABs for high potency drugs because you don't have the assurance that there is not escaping of any of these potent drugs. Only a closed isolator system that would be suitable for the manufacture of high potency drugs.
Is there a recommended approach for manufacturers in terms of RABs versus isolators?
It really depends on your setup in this case. Obviously, with a closed isolator system, there is no intrusion at all. So there is no interaction from the adjacent area with your product or your product components. But there are limitations to these systems. For example, let's say you have 1,000 units in that isolator, but you need more capacity. You need to find a way to introduce that additional capacity to fill more units. There are technologies that can enable that, but it's less flexible. However, an open isolator system, it's still a very good option. It still excludes the personnel from entering your enclosure, but it gives you more flexibility because you can opt for a constant introduction and removal of units that are to be filled. And that allows you to manufacture bigger batch sizes. Second to that, there is also a financial aspect that you need to account for, which is that your initial costs for an isolator, they are typically higher than when you went for a wrap system. So from my own experience and speaking with a number of companies, isolator systems might not always be the desired option because they are less flexible. They are decontaminated using an automated decontamination method, which is prescribed by the regulators for isolators. But if you discover that you have forgot something, and for example, you apply the wrong loading pattern or something else is not right, then you would have to abort your decontamination cycle and start all over again.
Thank you, Patrick, for that. Could you explain how a RABS differs in this regard?
The big difference is that, well, first, the difference is that the RABS require a grade B background, and it's usually not decontaminated using an automated system. It is decontaminated or disinfected using a sporicidal agent, which is typically a manual process. It can provide a bit more flexibility in some cases. For example, like I mentioned before, if you forgot to add a component or need to make an adjustment for which you need to open a door, you might have a procedural measure in place that allows you to add or change something without intervening the whole aseptic enclosure. And as such, you may still be able to maintain a grade A environment. With an isolator, once you have opened the door after decontamination, your grade A environment is gone, and you need to repeat your setup and your decontamination cycle from the start.
Are there other reasons why a manufacturer would choose a RABS over an isolator?
Yeah. Besides the potential flexibility, as mentioned before, we do see a number of companies retrofitting their existing filling lines with the RAB system. And it's still a serious investment, but it's less expensive than an isolator. However, the downside of that is over time, the operational cost of a RAB system, it's higher because it needs to be maintained in what is known a grade B area. If you have an isolator system, you are allowed to run that in a grade C environment if that is properly justified. And with a closed isolator system, you can even run it, if justified correctly, in a grade D environment.
Patrick, perhaps you could explain why that would be more cost efficient.
It is because your heating, ventilation and air conditioning, or your HVAC system, runs at a higher intensity in the grade B areas. And your personnel gowning requirements are more intensive in a grade B environment, because those personnel need to wear sterilized garments. And it's much more intensive for a person to get qualified and maintain that qualification status for a grade B area than for a grade C or a grade D area. Next to that also, the cleaning and disinfection frequency costs for maintaining a grade B room, they are much higher. And these are the types of considerations that manufacturers need to make and take into account. You might want to go for the highest level of sterility assurance, so you are considering a more closed isolator system. But if it's feasible, for example, do you have the footprint and the money in your facility? And does your process allow for an isolator? Or is it better to consider an open active RAPS, which is still a very good solution?
It sounds as though there are a lot of things to balance in the decision-making process. What advice do you have for manufacturers when considering what's really best for them?
Well, you obviously need to consider both what will meet your needs and what will keep you into compliance with the regulators. You really need to have a cross-functional team involved to look at the different angles, and then you can make an informed decision as to what is feasible and what will give you the high level of sterility assurance to manufacture a product in a safe, compliant, but also in a consistent manner.
Thank you, Patrick, for sharing your insights on sterility assurance and the barrier technologies available to manufacturers. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Formalex, part of Cencora, serves the pharma, biotech and medtech industries, guiding our clients through the entire product lifecycle, from early strategic planning, non-clinical and clinical, regulatory submission processes, and post-approval activities. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.